This is Dave Glowitz. On the phone with me is the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky. You ready to throw it down, Ben?
All right, let's rock and roll, baby.
Today we're talking about Ben's article titled Taking the New Yorker for a Ride that appeared in the Chicago Reader on March 11th, 2010. Ben, your article criticizes a 13-page article about Mayor Richard Daley by former Tribune reporter Evan Osnos that appears in the March 8th edition of The New Yorker. You lay out in your article why you think it's something of a, I guess it would be fair to say, you consider it something of a puff piece.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Osnos, who is a veteran reporter, intentionally neglects some of the facts that you point out, or is he actually ignorant of them?
I don't know. You know, I don't know the guy. As I point out in the story, I've never met him, and I can't read his mind. I didn't interview him. I just go by what I read. For what it's worth, he has friends in Chicago who have told me that or suggested that the article is largely shaped by editors at The New Yorker. So I really don't know, nor do I care. This is not about the fellow Osnos. This is about the piece. My problem with the piece that The New Yorker published is that it set up a phony situation. It set up the notion that we have a corrupt boss who has achieved amazing goals in terms of making Chicago sort of a leader in the war on poverty and taking Chicago from a city that was dysfunctional and falling apart and turning it into some sort of model for the rest of the country. All I want to point out is that that's a fraudulent setup. Chicago is no more or is just as dysfunctional after 20 years of Daley rule as it was before Daley's rule. And the central core issues of poverty that all big city mayors must deal with, Daley's just as clueless on how to deal with those as any other mayor. My point is, we shouldn't subscribe to this phony notion that a strong, dictatorial, corrupt, deal-making boss can somehow or other get things done in this great way of solving difficult problems, because it's not true. All we have, essentially, is a corrupt tyrant. We're not solving any big problems, and that's the point I want to make. So my problem with the article is it was perpetrating a fraud about what Chicago was like before Daley took over and what Chicago was like now. And in doing that, he was sending out a message that somehow or other we're all better off with tyrants. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of a small D Democratic guy myself. Don't see how a tyranny, and particularly a corrupt one, is to the benefit of anyone. And if you look at the evidence, it's certainly not the benefit of people in Chicago. This interpretation emerges from utter ignorance of what Chicago was like before Mayor Daley took over and what Chicago is like now, and sort of like a willful ignorance, like people closing their eyes to the poverty that exists in this city. The really entrenched problems of poverty and joblessness and crime and dysfunction, both education and housing issues, what have you. Just the problems of entrenched poverty are beyond Daley's scope, and they're beyond the scope of his predecessors. So all we have in Chicago is a corrupt administration that basically handles the basic day-to-day services, which is what we had before Daley came in, only it wasn't as corrupt. So we've got the corruption, and we don't have any of the salvation. The older I get, the more difficult it is for me to accept the standard interpretation of life in Chicago under the Daley regime.
You know, as you're talking, it occurs to me that if this article in The New Yorker successfully paints Daley as a benevolent dictator, and that it successfully makes the argument that corruption is the price of that benevolence, then it's sort of an anti-democratic argument. You know, it may persuade people in other cities to look the other way at corruption or make them believe that it's okay for them not to pay attention to government because look what's going on in Chicago, and it works just fine.
That is a great point. I completely agree with you. And I think that any reader outside of Chicago should read this article with a great deal of apprehension. One of the points they make in the article is how envious other mayors are of Daley. Well, if they're envious, it's because Daley has all the power. I think putting all that power in the hands of one person is not good in terms of democracy, fostering democracy, the point you're making. Or it's not good in terms of promoting an efficient government that doesn't waste your money. To put a spin on Daley's regime that he has somehow or other done what nobody else could do, and that is deal with entrenched problems of poverty, is worse than misleading. I think it sends out an upsetting message, as you were suggesting, to other people. You know, sort of like, oh, wow, let's hope Mike Bloomberg in New York becomes a tyrant, a benevolent one, like daily. I don't think that's the message you want to send, you want to convey. And I love to say, I'd say it over and over again, I don't know why, one of the other things that the article does, which is, which I find sort of humorous, is that it sets up Detroit as the comparison, as if not for Daley, Chicago would be Detroit, which I find so misleading. I mean, there's many cities in the country that have done a lot better than Detroit. Why aren't we comparing Chicago to them? If we compare Chicago to them, then we have to see that their cities don't have nearly as much corruption as Chicago does.
Why not compare to Portland?
Yeah, Portland. Well, I go the other extreme. Why stop at Detroit? Let's compare them to cities in Iraq or Iran or, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous how we picked on Detroit. But yeah, Seattle, Minnesota, New York. See, I don't live in these towns, so I haven't studied those towns the way I've studied Chicago's. But I do know from reading the New York Times on a daily basis that there's, on the surface, there's not nearly as much corruption in New York's municipal government as there is in Chicago's. Yet New York seems to be thriving every bit as much as Chicago. So maybe Chicago should be emulating New York and not the other way around.
We'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Dave, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. This is Dave Gloetz. You've been listening to the rest of the story. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.